telling his tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I came.
What's up, Wisconsin?
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's a long holiday weekend. I feel like I haven't talked on the radio in such a long time. It's like, is my mouth going to work today? I certainly hope so. But I've got Brian Kelly with me to make sure that all goes smoothly.
I can't technically make your mouth work better. I'm
well,
sorry.
You certainly make it sound like it does, which I deeply appreciate. It was an interesting weekend. We got to start with the baseball, of course.
Yeah, baseball was fun this weekend.
A little bit rocky for the Brewers. I mean, it's really something when
you're playing the Dodgers. Come on.
I know. Big stars. But it hurts when you hit yet another grand slam and you still lose. Though, I was so elated to see them pick up a win yesterday. I think they ended 3-4 on a tough road trip. So they're coming back home. We're going to give away some Brewers tickets today. For their home game at AmFam Field tomorrow, they'll be playing the Pittsburgh Pirates, so don't go anywhere. We're going to do that before the show is out this afternoon. Maybe a couple of pairs today, maybe another pair tomorrow. First pitch is going to be at 7:10, so if you are a Brewers fan and you would like to go to the game on Civic Media, keep listening. We're going to give away at least one pair of tickets this afternoon and at least one pair tomorrow, if not more. I'm always excited to give things away for free. That feels good.
It's fun to be able to do this, and plus these tickets are friggin' amazing.
Yes.
So if you have a chance to win them, always win them.
I've very much, very much enjoy the tickets. And my personal favorites, my family's tickets that we get every year, is they're not as good as Civic's because those are fancy pants people seats. But ours are the top level, but like the first or second row, right behind home plate. I think it's one of the best views of everything that's happening on the field. I dig it. You also get up there in like near nosebleed seats. You get people who are the diehards. Like there are a lot of scorecards up there, right? A lot of people keeping score and a lot of people listening to Euchre and others call the game.
You can
on
actually
their
see Euchre up there, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
You get a statue behind the pole for the Euchre seats.
But I love it.
Which is fantastic. But I believe that entrance where you come in is where they also sell the gigantic cans of beer. Like they have
huge cans of beer.
Two, three places in the stadium.
The popcorn truck is up there, yeah. Which is.
But you can get the gigantic, like 32 ounce cans.
Yeah.
Which are.
A mega pint if you're Johnny Depp.
Basically, my giant mitts can actually make that beer look normal.
Look normal. That's always the arbiter, right? If I place the drink in Brian Kelly's hand, does it look normal sized? If so, it is a large drink. That is the way that it goes. My favorite thing about that level is that there is one of the best popcorn trucks up there. There's probably nothing as nutritionally bankrupt as the popcorn truck popcorn, but like you will run the risk if you try to sneak your hand in there when I've got the tub in front of me. Like, no, that is mine.
It's a vehicle for salt and butter.
Yeah. And needless, useless carbohydrates. My favorite kind of food. I'm a salty, crunchy kind of girl. Not the sweets, not so much.
I need a little bit to balance it out. A kettle corn is about as sweet as I'll get.
Yeah, exactly. Both savory and sweet. Brian, this is why we do this wonderful show together. Everybody, we're going to start. There's a lot going on, but we wanted to bring us all back from the big holiday weekend with a little bit of ease. So if you've got anything fun that you'd like to share from your weekend, I welcome you to join Brian and I for this first half hour. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. There were a couple of other really fun baseball things that happened. The first one was, and this is one of those things that, like, only in baseball could an announcer go off on the sorts of epic tangents that you will hear during baseball games. There's a lot of air to fill.
Yeah.
So, you know, the game, even with the new pitch clock and all these different modifications, can sometimes run a little long. especially when you have a lot of pitching changes, which is, you know, part of the modern game. One of my favorites that I heard from the Brewers announcing crew, I think it was on the 5th of July, they went off on a tangent about Family Guy. It was a full 5 minutes and concluded with a Stewie impersonation. Oh, mother. I mean, it was good. And I appreciated that. But then you, my friend, Brian Kelly, consumer of more baseball than I, Maggie Dawn, and hats off to you, sir, shared with me what you almost have to listen to this to believe where it ends up. And it's lengthy, folks. Stick with me because I hope you all at least enjoy hearing me talk about baseball much as I like watching
it. And if you like baseball, this is Vin Scully. I don't think this needs... This is a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Scully talked about Madison Bumgarner, and here we go.
You know, Bumgarner tells a story which, in a sense, reminds you of what it takes to be a big league ball player. It's 2 years ago in spring training, and he and his wife were roping cattle, which is what they do. 1-1 pitch. Sinker low, ball two, 2-1. And they were startled by a large snake. And Madison thought it was a rattlesnake, so he grabbed an axe and he hacked the snake to pieces. But there's something more to the story.
What?
2-1 pitch. Low, ball three, 3-1. When his wife Allie and an expert field dresser examined what was left of the snake, she found two baby jackrabbits inside pieces of the snake and extracted them. 3-1 pitch to Turner, way inside, ball four. And after she extracted them a short while later, the Bumgarners noticed that one of the rabbits had moved slightly. It was alive. Well, his wife brought the rabbit back to their apartment. For the next few days, they kept it warm, bottle nursed it, and the rabbit soon was healthy enough that they released it into the wild. And Madison said, just think about how tough that rabbit was. First it gets eaten by a snake, then the snake gets chopped to pieces, then it gets picked up by people and lives. It's all true. Meanwhile, line drive base hit to center by Hendrick, and the Dodgers are in business, first and second and nobody out. So I guess really the morale to the whole story about the rabbit and the snake, you've got to somehow survive. You've got to somehow battle back. A lesson well taught for all of us.
My favorite part about that, first of all, like only Vin Scully, right?
Yeah. I mean, Euchre can do that type of thing too, but in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually baseball arcana, something about him being a crappy MLB, Major League Baseball.
When I was back there,
right,
I was
catching and I stunk. But my favorite part of this is during this lengthy story that has nothing to do with baseball, zero things to do
with
baseball.
Other than Madison Bumgarner's the pitcher on the mound.
Correct. He manages to insert a wee bit of business. Oh, and that's a line drive down to... that'll be a first base hit. But back to the bunnies. What?
Yeah. He didn't miss a beat, didn't miss a call.
Miss a pitch. It's so funny. I mean, you would swear you were listening to a voiceover for Nat Geo or the Animal Play. No, folks. That's a little Major League Baseball play-by-play calling by none other than Vin Scully. Just fantastic. Thank you for bringing that to
my attention. It's one of my favorite calls of all time.
And he begins the tale, of course, with this line, what it takes to be a major leaguer. I'm sorry. I'm not sure that I've ever known a team to draft anyone for Major League Baseball because they were eaten by a snake and managed to survive after being bottle nursed.
Well, figuratively, yeah.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you that was figurative, Brian Kelly.
All real baseball players have been born from snakes.
I don't know. I'm getting like an image of a don't tread on me flag. It takes you all kinds of places.
This is baseball we're talking about.
That was hilarious. Wanted to share with you all. I hope you found it just as amusing as I did. Bravo, hats off to you. But the really cool baseball news that occurred this past weekend was that there was actually all women doing a Major League Baseball broadcast.
The whole crew.
So it was the play-by-play, the color commentator, on field. Who else am I forgetting?
That's the three major.
You had Beth Mowins doing play-by-play, Elise Menaker doing color commentary, and Taylor McGregor was on the field. So awesome. And it was for a Cubs game. You know, hey, Brewers, some of my weekends are open. If you need to go to an all-female commentary team. And Laura Ricketts, who is a part owner of the Chicago Cubs, I think she was on air with them. There's some really cool sound. Brian, why don't you pick one of your favorites? We'll be listening to that after. We're going to take a couple of messages and then come back. Yeah, so we're going to listen to what is an all-female broadcast team doing the call for the first time for the Chicago Cubs. We're going to hear from a little bit of their owner. That's a great moment as we are all living through this incredible explosion and acceleration of women in sports, including sports commentary, which I'm really excited to take a listen on.
Yeah,
of course.
They also talked about how cool it was that the Red Stars had an outdoor soccer event there, had 32,000 people there, which is the largest female sports event for that sport.
Yeah, soccer. Mm-hmm. Bested only by a little women's collegiate volleyball last season. By the way, they're coming on tour. Yeah, they're coming on tour to Milwaukee. Anyways, you're not going to want to miss this sound. It is indeed historic. Right in my sweet spot, a little baseball to get us started here on this post-holiday Monday morning. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back after these important messages.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Cool Whip.
After all you put me through, you think I despise you. But in the end, I wanna thank you, cause you made me that much stronger.
Always getting stronger with you all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're also talking about women stepping forward in all manner of sports. Not just women's college hoops, not just the WNBA, not just women's volleyball, but also in sports commentating, which I think is amazing. It always irked me a little bit growing up. I listened to a lot of radio baseball. Like, that is a baked-in childhood memory. Sitting in the backyard with lemon juice and Sun-In in my hair, right? Because it was the 80s. Like, trying to get as tan as possible with the Brewers game on the radio, right? Basically, like, bleach blonde and as tan as possible. It was a thing. 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, can attest.
Yeah. If you don't know what Sun-In is, enjoy. You can Google it. Another 80s favorite, Skin So Soft. We used it as a bug repellent. I don't know what the deal was with that, but it was a thing back then as well.
Yep.
Yeah, so dark tanning oil, Skin So Soft, Sun-In, Brewers game on the radio. It always irked me that I didn't hear any women ever talking about baseball.
Yeah.
And I had friends that played actually on Little League teams. So girls on what were back then nearly all boys Little League teams. That's now much, much more common. I basically always played some sort of, you know, T-ball back when it was too dangerous to actually have, you know, flying balls around. T-ball and then softball. And I didn't stop playing that almost ever.
Yeah.
I still play a little pickup. Terrible bar league softball. I get a little angry about it though, Brian. So I'm not the hothead that you want on your team permanently, because I probably am going to take it a wee bit too seriously.
I think I'll take that. That's fantastic. And I would say perhaps you know, your entire life going through sports, organized sports, has maybe, I don't know, helped you become who you are today?
It is. It's a big deal. I loved team sports. And so I do love that the Chicago Cubs put an all-female team together to do the on-air call for the Cubs game this weekend, play-by-play color and on field. And they talked with one of the Cubs owners, Laura Ricketts. Let's take a little of that sound. This is during the Cubs-Angels game. This was just yesterday on the Cubs radio network.
I'm going to skip ahead just to two, just cool. to give you the two last ones because it gives you all of them and gives you the kind of feel of it.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love it.
What I'm sure both of you would say your playing actually helped you get to where you are today.
Oh, no doubt. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, somehow women are new to this when in reality it's been our daily existence, whether it's wiffle ball or kickball or, you know,
T-ball.
All kinds of activities as a kid. That's kind of all we know. And I think that's more the norm now for young girls and hopefully the understanding of young boys and brothers and fathers and husbands, you know, that it's just that's how it is with women in sports now. And what a difference it makes for young girls to be involved.
Love that. That's Beth Mowins. I know her voice anyway. I'm like, oh, that's Beth.
She also she broke the barrier for NFL commentating.
She sure did. A familiar voice to many. Let's take a listen to the last clip we've got.
I believe that sports is really a platform for empowerment and equity for women. And it's just exciting to see, you know, that all of that growing. You can see it day by day, just the excitement and the momentum. It's really, I feel I'm blessed to be a part of it.
Well, likewise, because also I think, too, when you mentioned the life lessons, like the confidence that it would give you just growing up, playing sports, and the lessons that you learn, because I feel like everything that I take into life is like the little things I was learning in sports along the way.
Absolutely. Like how to set a goal, how to
handle
work
failure.
Hard to set a goal, how to get back
failure.
Up when you've been knocked down, what you learn from failing, how to be a good teammate, how to be a good leader. How to be persistent and resilient, all those things you learn by playing sports.
Yeah, that's nothing but to the good right there. Wonderful to hear them on air calling a baseball game. Since we have the time, I will tell you a very short little baseball story, softball story of mine. I was in D.C. I was a congressional intern for then Congressman Tom Barrett back in the day. It was the summer of 96, not 69. It was the summer of 96. And I was on a softball team, like a Capitol Hill Congressman's office softball team. We were playing at one of the fields that's like not so far off the mall. There's a whole bunch of them kind of around the National Mall. Anyways, we were playing and a squad pulled up way off the like far left field outfield and just was parking. I think had some time to kill and was just kind of watching the game, leaning on his squad outside of the car. And I was up to bat now because when I played softball, it was fast pitch. That's what I played. And we had a girl who, from my traveling AAU team, we had a girl that ended up playing at the very elite college level. I forget if she ended up going to like Bama or one of the Southern schools. This woman could throw a softball underhanded, fast pitch. Her top recorded speed was like 71 miles an hour, something like that. That is basically you're looking at 100 mile per hour hardball because the distance is shorter.
Distance is shorter. It's coming faster at you. It's coming from below, too.
And yes, the sinker, you know, that they fall off. You got the rise balls. Softballs are incredibly hard to hit.
Coming right off the hip, too. You can't place where it's coming from.
Can't see the seams. Anyways, I could talk about softball pitching for a long time. That is what I played, right? Like, that is all I knew. And it had taken a big adjustment for me to start to play slow pitch softball on these co-ed teams. So when you have this problem and you're a right-handed batter, what you're going to do is hit a lot of foul balls, which in most softball leagues, you're out, right? Sometimes they give you two. And you're going to hit them foul way left field, right? Because you're early on everything. So I get up, I'm at bat, cop had pulled up. First pitch comes in, I crank that thing, foul ball. Not that far from the police car. Okay. Can you imagine what happens next?
Hey, lady.
He doesn't say anything. He He was standing there, and he's like, yeah, yeah, I saw that. Huh? So they pitched to me again, and I'm a little bit of a wiseacre. So what did I do? I'm like, I'm not going to try to hit this foul. I'm going to try to hit the cop car. Let her rip. I'd sort of like step back in the box, dip the shoulder, and like really tried to park this thing. And I hit the bumper of the cop car. And he gets out. He's standing out there, and he gets his handcuffs out and starts twirling them around in the air. I was like, hey, man, you're in the field of play. Get off the field. It's my little D.C. softball story for you.
That's
here,
awesome.
Here on this Monday afternoon. I ran into a friend from that internship like 15 years after that. And I'm like, hey, do you remember when you hit the cop car? That was the first thing. Not like, do you remember W-2? Boy, was that interesting. No, I remember when you hit the cop car when we were playing softball. That's what I got for you. Not the hawk and dove. None of that. Anyways, we'll dig in when we come back. It's good to be back with y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Your farm update is next. Don't go anywhere.
Makes me that much wiser. Thanks for making me fighter. Made me learn a little bit faster. Made my skin a little bit thicker.
A man stands alone at a plate. This is the time for what? For individual achievement. There he stands alone. But in the field, what? Part of a team.
Nothing, says Edith Piaf. Especially don't regret telling old softball stories.
Shouldn't. It happened to you.
It happened to me. I cannot wait to talk about what happened in France. Because, wow. Huge. Huge. But before we do that, we're going to give away two Brewers tickets right now.
Right now.
So here is the trivia question. If you're the first caller that Brian decides to pick up with the correct answer, you will get a pair of club level Brewers tickets to the Brewers Pirates game tomorrow, Tuesday at AmFam Field in beautiful Milwaukee. First pitch is at 7:10. Here's your trivia question for the day. What is the Brewers versus Pirates all-time record? Brewers versus Pirates all-time record. I also want to give a shout-out to Tyler in Columbia County sharing with us that he and his dad would be fishing and listening to the Brewers game on the radio. We'd travel the state and always knew the local Brewers station no matter where we went. And guess what, Tyler and everybody else out there? Civic Media has you covered. Throughout the Fox Valley, you can hear the crew on 98.3 FM, 1100 AM, southwestern Wisconsin on RCE, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM, southeastern Wisconsin, of course, on RJN, 99.9 FM, 1400 AM, and in Kenosha, 98.1 FM. And in the Northwoods, folks, we got you covered on 98Q in Park Falls, which you can find at 98.3 FM. Take the Brewers everywhere, just like Tyler and his dad did. Thanks so much, Tyler. Lynn Bauer from Oconomowoc sharing that her daughter, now 44 years old, and a picture of then-state senator in 1992, Tom Barrett. I love the picture. Thank you so, so much, Lynn. That is amazing. Yeah, I was with Tom a mere 4 years later on Capitol Hill. I have some pictures of Tom Barrett with the big old mustache. Used to have an enormous mustache. Had that for a long time. That was sort of his signature thing.
Yeah, that's a thing.
It used to be a thing. That is for gosh darn sure. But let's talk about what was going on in France. Every single political prognosticator thought that Marine Le Pen and the far right, the equivalent of the MAGA movement, was basically going to have an absolute runaway victory and take control of France's very powerful lower house of their legislature. Everyone thought it was just going to be a runaway win. The far right was celebrating. They're basically called the National Rally. They have it in French, but it's the National Rally Party, far right. And it didn't happen. Did not happen. Now, there's a couple of really interesting things about this. The reason that everybody was certain that the far right was going to have like this runaway, it was going to be a total slaughter, was because France does these elections in two rounds. The first one's just sort of like an indicator, and then the second one's the one that really counts. It's complicated. And so the first round, people thought it basically showed that the far right was gonna take over France's most powerful legislative body. But the second round was over the weekend, and that is not at all what happened. What you had was the New Popular Front, which is a left party, left of the current President Macron's sort of more centrist party. They won. They got the vast majority of the seats. Now, no party in France was able to get to the number to take an absolute majority. So there's going to have to be some coalition. These three sort of factions, the far right, the far left, and the centrists, they really don't get along so well. But basically what happened in the second round was that the far left, or the more left, and the centrists got together, and they were looking at the far right, and they went, yes, we don't want that. That's bad. And they were able to convince voters of this. And voters turned out in France for this second round. The turnout, I want to get the statistic right. This is according to the New York Times. Turnout, it's reported to be around 67% nationwide. That's how many people voted in the second round. The threat posed by the far right, that's what people think was got people to turn out. Now, that is compared to 2022, when less than 50% of France turned out for the same vote. So less than 50 to 67% of eligible registered voters voting in France. That is the highest turnout that France has seen since the election in 1997. Incredibly good news. In a working class neighborhood in Paris, there was just absolute jubilation, partying going on. The relief that was felt in France, very palpable. Here's what's interesting about those. First, the two rounds of voting in France is really interesting, because effectively what the first round ends up operating as is like a pressure release. People use that first round vote to effectively lodge protest votes. It's sort of like the unrestricted, right? It's kind of a little bit like a primary, but it's not the same thing. But they used it to express their dissatisfaction, okay, to lodge a complaint effectively against President Macron, who has terrible approval ratings. And they did that. But it's the second round of voting that matters in France. That's the one where they assign seats in the legislature. And in that round of voting, the French people showed up en masse, highest turnout since 97, and realized that they had a choice between fascism and democracy. And France this weekend stood up and voted for democracy. Oh, and by the way, this same exact dynamic played out in the presidential elections in France, I think just a year or two ago. Brian, I'm sure, will help fill me in. I think it was last year. Everybody thought Marine Le Pen and the far right were going to win. No. Macron pulled out a surprising victory. Again, he's got really low approval ratings. Does this sound familiar to anyone?
It seems somewhat parallel.
And let's not forget what happened in Britain. just last week as well. The Labour Party, the left party in Britain, has taken control of the House of Commons for the first time in 20 years. They took it from the Conservatives, aka the Tories. So what you have in the two governments that have, that the United States pulled a lot of their ideology and sort of their legal framework and their democratic framework from, France and the United Kingdom, have turned away from the far right repeatedly. Twice in the last 2 weeks. First the UK and now France. This is the analogy, right? The people of the United Kingdom, the people of France understood what a threat the far right poses to democracy, small d, to democratic values, small d, to freedoms, both as a society and on an individual basis. We need to take a page.
They took a page after our revolution. I figured, you know, maybe back and forth, we can do that.
So again, it blew people's minds. This was just totally unexpected. Now, here's the change since 2022, right? This is not to deny that the far right hasn't gained in popularity in France, that it hasn't gained in popularity in Britain. It has. Certainly has here, to my chagrin. So here's the difference. In 2022, the National Rally Party, which is the far right party, took 89 seats. This year, they took 142. That is a scary increase. That is an increase of 53 seats in France's legislature. The centrist party from 2022, again, this is in France, from 2022 to 2024, this last election that just happened this weekend. Oh, by the way, I'm just going to lean into this. France votes on the weekend.
What?
Oh, that's interesting.
They want people to vote?
Hmm.
They're making it easier?
I don't want to digress. The centrist party over this election over the weekend in France, they went from 245 seats in 2022 to 150. So a big loss, but guess what that is? It's still more than the far right. And lastly, the sort of left wing in France went to 131 in 2022 to 178, a significant increase. So I just, this is incredibly, incredibly important. What you're going to now see in France might be, governing in France is very difficult for a whole bunch of structural reasons about sort of how coalition governments have to be put forward, how a president of one party and then a coalition government have to interact. It's complicated over there. You're probably going to see some, what's the word I'm looking for? You're going to see some gridlock, I think would be fair to say, in France. But I will take gridlock any day and twice on Sunday, especially when we get to vote on the weekends.
My goodness.
My goodness. I will take gridlock over fascism and oppression and homophobia, misogyny, racism, and all the lot of it. So in total, you look at the left-wing parties and Mr. Macron's centrist parties, there's sort of a coalition in the center in France, they polled over 200, they're at like two, I shouldn't do math on the radio, 178 plus 150, they're over 300. That's how they put together the coalition. You need 249, I think, to govern in France's legislature. Here was one of the voters said this. We are forced to make a choice that we would not have made otherwise in order to block the far right. Does this sound familiar, Brian?
There are some parallels.
Just some couple, two, three things that might have a lesson for us here in the United States.
Is there a dude named Franklin involved here?
No kidding. By the way, Macron's current popularity rating, I wanted to get this out there, 26%. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. When we come back, we're going to take your calls and comments on this. Ron, I see you. You will be first up. If you have a comment or extrapolation, a point that you'd like to make about what just went down in not just France, but the United Kingdom, a turning away from far-right authoritarianism, hate speech, xenophobia, isolationism, and towards coalitions that bring the center and the left together, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, because you want to regret rien.
Ma vie, car mes joies aujourd'hui, ça commence avec toi.
France is no longer France.
My name is Pierre. I have come from Paris. I have come to have sex with your family.
I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. If you'd like to get your 2 cents, 5 cents, a dime's worth, maybe even a quarter, in here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What do you make of the fact that the center and the left have turned back the tide of authoritarianism in both France and the United Kingdom? It's a significant, significant moment. Ron from Milwaukee, you're on the air. What do you have to say, sir?
Hi, Maggie. You know, I don't want to make too much of this, but everything leading up to this election, as in recent past elections in Europe, in many places, had the public reacting rightward to the situations then and now, and that was based on polling. The polls said they're going rightward, you know, that Marine Le Pen and her group are going to win. And obviously the polling was wrong, or it was screwed up in some fashion or another. And if you see the result of that, how could you, whether you're a reporter who writes stories based on polls here, or the public or a political party that's trying to figure out what to do next, How could you ever decide to make important critical decisions based on polls that in other countries have now been, at least for the moment, refuted?
Ron, I could kiss you, Ron, because you're setting up where I'm going with this, right? And that is, there are fundamental principles at issue in this election here. There were fundamental principles at issue in the United Kingdom and in France. And you see what is happening in those countries. I think that the same is afoot here. I'm not putting stock in the polls right now. They show basically a stagnant election. And I think it's really critical that we shouldn't make potentially an existential decision for our country based on snap polls. That we knee-jerk is not a good way to make really important decisions. Emotionality is not a good way to make really important decisions. And so too here. To me, that is the fundamental point. Lisa from Middleton, pointing out this really important fact. Thanks so much for sharing, Lisa. France has 577 seats in its lower chamber, which is the more powerful of the two, much like in Britain. And those 577 seats represent about 70 million French folks. We have 435 seats in our House of Representatives. And we have 333 million people. So if you do the math, Lisa did. I'm going to trust Lisa's math here. Thank you so much. If our representation, just the proportions, worked like France's, we would have over 2,000, close to 2,800 House of Representatives seats. And if we did that, it would, by definition, much, much more fairly represent the wide array of beliefs and political viewpoints of our citizens. It would decrease the importance of political parties. They would become elections focused more on what the people of those jurisdictions, those particular constituents wanted. We would have a better representative democracy. It's a really, really critical point. Thanks so much, Lisa, and thanks, Ron. Excellent point. CJ, what's up, brother?
Hey, Maggie, thanks for taking my call. As I listen, though, you know, to you try to explain this, it's all about playing a shell game, because we're living the policies that your party believes in. We're living the border. We're living inflation. We go to the store, we go to the grocery, and we've heard.
So, CJ, do you believe that the Wall Street Journal is a no? I just want to, because you keep talking about these things and stating things as if they're facts, but they're not facts.
No, but you never
does
respond.
Well, I'm trying to. Does it matter to you? Do you believe that the Wall Street Journal gives pretty good commentary on the economy?
Well, it depends on which part of the Wall Street Journal you're reading.
Say the op-ed pages.
Not so good response.
I mean,
do you agree that when President Biden took office, inflation was at 9% and not zero like he tries to campaign?
He's never claimed. Okay, this is Joe Biden never said anywhere inflation was at. And if he did, it was a misspeak. He's never said inflation was at 0% when he came in. And I don't know why it's a like pat on the back to point out the fact that Donald Trump had driven inflation up to 9% by the time Joe Biden took office. I don't think that's a winning point. Whether you're talking about World Bank, any of the market watchers, whether you're talking about the credit rating agencies, CEOs, there was an op-ed today that ran with, I think, the former Treasury Secretary from, I think it was the Reagan administration wrote it. CEOs have written about this. The Wall Street Journal, The Economist. The United States has the strongest economy of any Western democracy right now, full stop. That's not a debatable fact. So, yeah, are people still feeling the press of inflation? Absolutely. Should we be doing absolutely everything to make it more affordable for Americans to live? Absolutely. Let me tell you something. A 10% import tariff, which is what Donald Trump has proposed, will absolutely bury the middle class. A $2 trillion tax cut for the most wealthy and corporations, which is what Donald Trump has proposed, will bury the middle class. We need to tax wealth like work, which is what Joe Biden is all about. No more handouts for the wealthy. That's what I say. That's what our president says. That's what works for the middle class. I'm Maggie Dawn. Don't go anywhere. News, weather, and sports are next. And then Brian, I'll be back.
Looking for some French, but you're an asshole.
What?
Asshole.